My subject has been assigned as, what would I do if I were to do it again? In other words, what changes would I make? And the implication, of course, is primarily in the church. What changes would I make there? Well, let me stop right there. Nothing. We've got the guidebook, haven't we? All we have to do is stay with it. Learn it. Know it, put it in effect, live it. That's all we have to do. So let's not change anything in the church according to what the Bible says. Now, does the Bible not also give us liberty in certain things to do different things in different ways? Absolutely. When Wayne gave me this assignment, I kind of looked at him a little bit crosswise, because I thought maybe he gave me this subject because of my age. Well, I will admit I'm 82. I still work full time. I work for World Video Bible School, teaching brethren and non-brethren all over the world. I have the privilege of teaching somewhere else in the world right now, by video. No matter what time of day it is, either I or some other instructor is teaching somewhere in this world that word to help them stay within the limits God has set. So, would I change anything? No. Wouldn't even change my marriage. I've only had my bride around 62 years. I think that's an accomplishment in today's world, don't you? She had to put up with me all that time. That's amazing to me. What's this amen I hear over here? Okay. But actually, I'm taking a little strange tack to this. It's not my age that qualifies me. It's what I've done in this life. What my experience is that brings me then to make the recommendations I'm going to later on. And if you want somebody with a checkered career, I got it. It's a strange career through my life. I might say very quickly that I was in the world, very much in the world, until I was 37 years old. That's when I was converted. So I came along a little later in life. I've had to work out there in the world. I've been with people where they are that are not members of the church. I didn't have any idea that there was a Church of Christ. Didn't have any idea at all. Till I hired a young man come to work for me. And his life was so good. I told my wife, we need to know these folks. And that was my exposure to the church. So don't tell me your life can't count. Your life can count. You can draw people to the Lord. So, how did I start out? Like most young people, it was right after the Second World War when I ended up finally old enough to get a job. And hooray, I became a ditch digger. And I've raised up a little bit since then. Bottom of those ditches get pretty deep sometimes. But anyway, that's the way I started. Digging ditches, then went into the warehouse labor, working in retail stores, all kinds of labor that young people do. And during this time in my life, I had a very bad exposure that I had to work myself out of. I was living in Des Moines, Iowa. And I went to work full-time for the local Don. Do anybody know who the local Don is? He's the head of the mafia. And I was working for him on the side while I was doing other things. I had a twofold job, number one, as an enforcer. Does that give you an idea? The second one, I was a disruptor. Do we have enforcers and disruptors around today, politically, everything else? Yeah, we do. After high school, I decided to go on to college. Math was easy to me, so I decided to take on accounting, bean counter. 2 years, but my Don was getting to be a little more pressure on my life for doing more things. I was getting bored, quite frankly, with counting beans. And so I quit college. I said, how can I break this cycle I've got in my life? Now, mind you, I'm not a Christian. How can I break this cycle in my life? Well, let's go to Uncle Sam. Let's join the Army. Become a professional soldier. I did that. I was very fortunate. I was in the right place at the right time through most of this. I served, of course, basic and training like that, and then ended up in the 18th Airborne Corps. And had a lot of good work there, went overseas with them and everything, and I came back within a 5-year period as a master sergeant. Now, does anybody know what that is? That's your top non-commissioned officer rank. I was one of the youngest master sergeants in the Army. So I've had military background. I've learned discipline. I've learned how to say yes, sir, when the guy in front of you is way off base. And so I've had that exposure in my life. I got out. They wanted to get me to reenlist, but I asked him, what more rank can you give me? And he says, I can't. And I said, goodbye. Why should I spend another 25 years with you when I can't go anywhere? And so I decided, all right, I'll go back to college. I changed my major then to actuary science. Now, is there anybody here who knows what that is? That's pure math. Pure math. We're the guys behind the insurance companies that tell you how much premium to pay. The guys that figure out the odds that you're going to die before a certain time, depending upon your life expectancy. All of that. Well, between my junior and senior year, the entire college faculty was hired by the University of Alabama, or Georgia, I can't remember which. And that left me with my senior year left only. And there were only two other schools in the United States that taught it, the University of Iowa, which was close, or MIT. Was accepted for either. But I couldn't get a job. I had a wife and a youngster. Now, so far, we're talking about that word providence, aren't we? God guiding my life, giving me all these kinds of experiences. Well, I had to do something, so I went into what is called the small loan business. This is the business where you loan money to people who can't go to the bank and can't go to the retail store and get credit. It's a rough and tumble business, but I went into that for several years and managed several units in a few different states. And so I got to know the seamy side of the civilian life that way. But then a major national company, retail, decided to invite me to come into their credit, and I did. And I really thoroughly enjoyed that. And I ended up managing a rather large unit. We had several thousands of accounts and several millions of dollars on the books. So I had gone up, and I was beginning to wonder a little bit because I'd been converted by then. I was 37. And I had to make a decision of what I wanted to do with my life. And of all things, after just 2 years in the church, they made me a deacon. Can you imagine that? And I said, I don't have the knowledge to be a deacon. I need to go to a preacher school. Now, that's an old man in a preacher school. Your studying days have been passed a long time. And you all, many of you, know what that's like to go through a preacher school. And so I had to make that decision. And I was helped a little bit. for the regional manager came up to my office and says, how would you like to be a district manager? Well, I had to either go to school or I had to be a district manager. District manager was going to take me away from my wife and children with much traveling. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. So I quit and went to a preacher school, Bear Valley out in Denver. I'd been accepted by them and Sunset both. But I had better support going out there. So what do you do when you want to feed kids and a wife? You go where the money is and follow it. And I'm glad I did. So I graduated from there when I was 39. That was in 1974. So I've been around the church a while. I went to Northwest Iowa and preached in a congregation in a town of about 3,000 people. Now I want you to do your math a little bit as we go through here. About 3,000 people. We had five congregations in town who sat 500 or more every Sunday morning. Have you run out of people in town? Plus several smaller congregations as well. All of them Calvinistic. Presbyterians were liberal. I mean, they were the tulip folks. And I attended one of their meetings five nights a week, and guess what each night was? I mean, very Calvinistic. I'd go up to speak to people and they'd turn their back on me because before we ever got there, the newspaper had run a spread on us coming into invading their territory, beating up my kids in school. Not good. But we went there, worked several years. It was a good work. But like I said, it was pure Calvinism. There was a little town, about 5 miles from us, and from our little town to that town, you could go from preschool all the way through 4 years of college, all Calvinistic. All of it. And that was the territory. I thought I was in a foreign country. And the primary language was Dutch, not English. One congregation of the 500 didn't even speak English in the building. That's here in America. That's how strong they were. But anyway, we got through that. We survived all of that. And then I went with York Christian College up in Nebraska. They wanted me to come and be on the administration with them there and work with them, help pick out teachers, help raise money. And that's a sore subject with me when you come to colleges and raising money. I only had to come up with $5 million a year, every year, just to make it go. And so I've been in college administration, and I've been to all of their conferences where all of the Christian colleges get together. So I know the inside workings, and I also know the politics, the horrible, horrible politics that went along with it. Sad to say, brethren, but it's the truth. After that, Bear Valley contacted me and said, why don't you come back? Not as a student this time, but on staff, which I did do. Enjoyed the work, but I was a substitute teacher also. Do you know what it's like to be in the middle of, say, Revelation and the instructor can't be there and you got to fill in the next class? And you don't even know where he was. That can be a harrowing experience. But anyway, that's the job I had and worked there at that time. And so I really enjoyed that, but I was down here in Texas on a lectureship up in the Panhandle, little town called Dalhart. And a couple of guys were also speakers there. One was named Jerry Moffat. You ever hear of him? Yeah. Jerry Moffat. And a guy by the name of Bill Jackson. Jerry was the head of the Southwest School of Preaching in Austin, and Bill was the preacher. Well, shortly after that, I was contacted by the elders there and said, why don't you come down here? And we know you like the classroom better. How about full time in the classroom, not administration? Not telling me that they wanted me to take over the school after a year or two. And so I came to Texas. I'm not a native Texan. And I did not get here as fast as I could. I'm just here. Why? Because this is where the Lord put me. Back to that word, providence. Yeah, back here. And so I worked with that school for several years as a teacher, as a dean, and as the director. Stepped up through those three areas. And then a friend of mine came up to me, actually two friends, and said, what do you think about putting a preacher school on video? Now, I love the classroom. I love to watch faces. I love them to go, oh, yeah. You know, as they come across new things in the Bible. I love that. Love to see them. And if you go on video, that's gone. But I could see where this would reach all over the world. And so I said, okay, guys, let's go. So we started World Video Bible School 30 years ago this year. And I've been full-time ever since, right there, teaching all over the world. So it started out as a school of preaching on video, full curriculum, tests, memory work, term papers, all of it. We still function that way. We also do a lot of other things as well. As Rick can tell us back here, Brumbach, as he went to Israel for us, did quite a bit of work. And so it's been enjoyable work, and I really have enjoyed it. Now, right now we have gone on the net with the school. Enrollments, we're averaging right now 120 new enrollments every week. Every week. How many people are we teaching? Over 10,000 active students all over the world. I said all of that to get around to my subject so that you would know that I'm not somebody that was raised in the church and became a preacher and lived, quite frankly, with those blinders on. I've known the world. I've known the seemly part of it, the horrible part, both physically and spiritually, so that I've come to this point in my life. And the day I quit working, I will be dead. Life is too good and there are too many people to help. Too many. So as long as I can keep going, even though I may not be able to stand up all the time, I'm going to be able to teach. I'm going to do it. I need to do it. I have to do it. I have to do it. So, what am I going to change in the church? I've already told you that, haven't I? Nothing. And I feel naked up here without my Bible. I do. But this is not about teaching you a class out of the book today. This is to make you think about some things that we can do to improve what we're doing for the Lord. Okay, so this is the meddling session. This is the meddling part. Some are going to like it and some aren't. We had a phrase several years ago, tough. I'm going to give it to you anyway. Christian colleges. Now, you know, I've been there. I've been in the administration. I've worked in that area. So I know whereof I come here. Have you noticed the colleges, just like the church, after a few years begins to wander, begin to drift off? I don't know of a single one right now that really holds all of the line. There are some that are so much better than others. And I wouldn't be afraid to send a youngster to it. But that tendency is there, and the way of the world has taught us that's what's happening. Can any of you identify the church in Ephesus for me? You think back and they're all gone, aren't they? They've disappeared. They're gone. That happens here to the universities and colleges as well. When I hired a man at York, I knew him quite well, knew him since he was in junior high. He came up and wanted to be on staff, and I let the other guys take him and wander around and show him everything, and then I got a hold of him and took him over and set him down. I said, okay, here's what's wrong here. When we got through, I said, now do you want to come with me and help? He said, yes. He did move on a little bit later and became director of the Bear Valley School of Preaching. So I knew I had a good man on my hands, didn't I? But Christian colleges have this way of going things, and I figured out why. They've always got to have new buildings, more instructors, and they all have to have this whole trail of letters behind their name. And that costs millions of dollars a year for every school. And are they really turning out good, solid Christians? That's just a question. I'm not sure. Some, maybe. What would I put in their place? Bible chairs. Bible chairs. Bible chair works with the individuals a whole lot closer than a big university does. The directors of those chairs know every single student and can be with them, cry with them, laugh with them, and help them grow. And you've got a local congregation attached to it. And we can really, really, really help those youngsters. And girls, you might find your MRS there. You ever heard of that degree? Joe O'Bannon, one of our elders, is that true? Through a Bible chair? It happened to you, didn't it? Yeah. I much prefer Bible chairs over universities. And I have, I think, found out why they are having so much trouble. You see, it costs a lot of money to build buildings and hire all those folks. And our liberal brethren are more liberal with their finances than we are. We're conservative also with our finances. And we don't give like they do. So, where do the colleges go? They go where the money is, so they can build all these buildings, have all these chairs, have all of that excitement that you have around it, and football teams and everything like that. I prefer a Bible chair. Very much prefer it. Cliff, do we have one anywhere close here?
We were kidding.
There you go. All right. So I much prefer them. how much money do I want to keep sending to a college that's going to train people for other endeavors in life, when in a Bible chair I can work on their souls, and I'm not worried about their grade in mechanics or their grade in English or this, that, or the other thing. I'm concerned about souls. So what do I prefer? Go on to a very secular campus and put in a strong, strong Bible chair. Lots of good, good results. And when these colleges begin to drift liberals and they're training preachers, what are those preachers going to be teaching out there? What they've been taught. If you've got a good Bible chair, where are all of these guys and the gals with their MRS? What are they going to be doing out there? Working for the Lord. Really working for him the way he wants them to. So, me, I'd switch all of mine to Bible chairs. Period. No. Exclamation point. Make it emphatic. I really would. Okay, got rid of the Christian colleges. And you notice I didn't pit them against schools of preaching. But would I change the schools of preaching? Mm-hmm. I really would. This might shock you, but listen to me until I'm through. I just assumed they didn't exist. Sorry, Rick. I would want them to be elders' schools. You train elders, and you train them strongly in the book, the same curriculum that you would for preachers. And you send those men out, and they, young men or older men, they're already, they go out and they go to work. And when you've got a strong eldership, are you going to get preachers? Yes. You get preachers. They will have these shining examples ahead of them of godly elders that know the book. And what would this also do for the preachers that go to work there? They better know the book too, hadn't they? Absolutely. Now, am I going to throw the preachers out? No. And so, let's go back and borrow a little bit from the universities. Can we not have a preacher's track? A men's track? Those that don't even want to be preachers? And they know in their life that they'll never be qualified or don't think they'll ever qualify to be an elder, but just want to know the book. Can we have a track for those guys? Now, I'm stepping close to the line, but can't we have a women's track? Teaching godly women to know the book better. If you had women that had been through that kind of education, what would happen to your education at those levels they teach? So fantastic. Now let me give you a little secret why I really, really am strong on that. We had three kids when we went into the preacher school. My wife, Loretta, attended every class except the preaching classes. She even beat me in scores on some of them. But she's had that complete education. Do you suppose she's been any help to me? I'll be studying along and I'll be doing something, or she's doing a private study, and she says, "Well, I don't understand what's going on here." She goes and gets the Greek. She studies it. Comes down to conclusions. What kind of help would that lady be for a preacher or an elder? I'm strongly for it. I'm strongly for it. And so would I change them? Yeah. I'm not going to ignore the preachers. But I think if we change our emphasis to preacher school, to elder schools, and then have the preachers, the women's, and the men's tracks along with them, what could we do for the brotherhood? Guys that are preaching, do you like preaching to an audience in front of you that just kind of quasi knows the Bible or would really know it? Which one would you rather preach and work with? I know which one I would. Where I don't have to stop and explain every little tiny thing, every word, but most of them would know. Could you make a dynamic congregation out of that? I think so. I think so. Watching my time, about 10 minutes? Okay. Now let's really go to meddling. Local congregations. Looking at them as individuals. I would want, and you could probably deduce this from what I've already said, but I would want every male Christian to be able to walk up to that pulpit and preach a sermon. Every male Christian. Now, my later years in high school and college, as you know, was in Des Moines, Iowa. And I went back visiting one time. I was working for Bear Valley. And the real conservative congregation was way, way across town. I mean, across town. And I thought, well, let's go to someplace close here. And there was a little one that was fairly close. I didn't know anything about it. And so we went over and attended. And a young teenager got up and he preached the sermon. And it was fantastic. I'm saying, this young man has this kind of knowledge? It turned out, as I introduced myself as training preachers, that it was an anti-located preacher congregation. They didn't believe in located preachers. They believed every man should be one. Now, I don't agree with them. But they were cordial to me. They were Christian all the way through. But I learned that every single man can preach and teach. And should we not have an educational system within the congregation that will produce those kinds of men? No, everything I've been talking about has been education, has it? Both talks, when you really boil it down to it. And I was quite impressed. And I would just love to find that congregation that every man could get up and preach or teach at any call at any time. Wouldn't that be something? That would be. You wouldn't have to worry about Wayne getting sick, getting up with a sour stomach and preaching to me. No, somebody would always be there and ready. Somebody. And you would have the confidence, the elders would have the confidence in those men that they could do that and that it would be scriptural. So I'm very, very strong on having every man able to preach and teach. Okay, ladies, you just as qualified for any class that you're eligible to teach. Every one of you. Can you do it? Of course you can. Of course you can. God didn't make any dummy Christians. They all learned how to be saved, didn't we? So we got no dummies. We can all do it, male and female. We can. So every man capable of preaching and teaching. No, I'm going to get to meddling some more. Let's talk a little bit about Bible classes. Wayne always kind of cringes when I do that. But we've had some very good educational programs. We have in the church. Very good. But I think that every congregation, I don't care the size, needs to have at least one in-depth class where those who have advanced a little bit more are able to go in and handle an in-depth. And I mean able to handle maybe a little Greek. I don't expect Hebrew. That's a little different game. But we have concordances, do we not, that gives us all the Greek background? Yeah. And so we need people digging below the surface. I'm not saying the entire program. You didn't hear me say that, did you? I said one little class amongst all the rest that we are doing. Include in-depth classes in our curriculum. Increase Bible knowledge, not subject knowledge. We're raising a lot of people knowing a lot of different subjects, but still aren't firm in their mind that they know the Bible. We need to know the Bible. We've got to teach the Bible. Now, right now, I'm getting ready to film the book of Daniel. Do you suppose I'm going to be down on the third grade level when it comes to him and the lion's den? Or Meshach, Abednego, no, you know, we're going to just treat those? No. And we all need to know that lower, deeper meanings and what was going on at 600, 500 BC. What was going on? So, increase Bible knowledge. 60 years ago, that puts us back in the 1950s, the church was known as a group of people who knew the Bible. Do we have that tag anymore? Not many places. Not many places. Cover these subjects that need to be covered as they come up in the Bible. And if you've got to cover, let's say, the Holy Spirit, just teach 1 Corinthians. By the time you get through chapters 12, 13, and 14, you'll have solved the problem. It's there. You can handle it. Preachers, I'm going to repeat Monday here. You need to be members of the congregation and then a preacher. You don't need to be an outsider coming in to preach to what you think they need. You need to be part of the congregation just like a deacon, just like an elder. You need to be a part of it so that you can help us. You need to know it. So, again, don't be a hireling. My recommendation, again, if you are, quit. Go help the church in other ways. Elders, not about you, but training. Look up to elders. Teach everybody in the church to respect the knowledge and the wisdom these men have and start them when they're in the cradle. Look up to them, and by the time they're 21, 22, how are they going to feel about their lives and going toward being elders and the little girls wanting to be their wives? We need to have those elders, and we need to teach our people to really respect them. And so, teach often on the qualifications of elders. Teach it often. For you'll find, except for the physical requirements, all the requirements are there for who? Us. Every one of them. So I've stirred the pot. I'm back to wait.